Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and with all of the commotion we hear literally every day on the news, wouldn't it be nice to be able to put your focus in a place where you could focus on becoming what you want to see in the world? Well, that's the title of the book, Becoming What You Want to See in the World, The Art of Joyful Living, and Mary Claire O'Neill is my guest today. Mary Claire, welcome to the show.
Hi, Don. It's my pleasure.
Mary, your book is not a big book, but it is a well-written book. It's also filled with a lot of good information. Why is it that for you, you decided that you wanted to address this issue? I mean, after all, you have been a professional clown. You are in the business of communication. And, you know, when you are in that kind of a professional arena, you have such a unique positioning to be in interacting with other people. Why is it that you decided you wanted people to know that they could become what they wanted to see?
Well, my formal education is in educational psychology, and I was trained to be a mental health educator, but I found, and I was actually a professional actor, not a professional clown. My husband, though, has been a professional clown, but I decided to get into acting as a result of being really shy and needing to get over that shyness,
mm-hmm.
and I ended up really enjoying it. But what I learned in the process was how to take what it was, the parts of myself that were authentic and real and important to me, and bring them out and express them in the world. The acting career, which was about 12 years, helped me to do that better. But what I found, even after being very successful at it, I studied and acted at the Royal National Theatre with Anthony Hopkins in 1986. What I found, though, was that even though I was good at acting, it was only part of my journey. It served me to give me some skills that I needed. And on that journey, I realized that so many people have important things that they really need to share it with the world, and that one by one by one, together, we make a difference in the world by taking those important parts of ourselves and expressing them, whether it be just to one other person, a group of people, or pour it into a book. And so my journey, the things that I learned, those tools and principles, I felt was really important to share. So that was the impetus behind writing the book.
When, and I'm sorry about the confusion regarding the clown, but being an actor, you have literally played all kinds of roles. You've seen all kinds of different environments. And when I think of the people that I've known that have been in the acting business, and of course being a clown is something that I've had a couple of my clients who decided that's what they wanted to do, and it was an avocation for them, but they loved it. And one of the people that I knew that did it was, like you, was very, very shy. And when she put on her costume, she was an incredible designer, and she made her own costumes and everything, she was transformed. And
yeah.
I related that memory because she was just gracious, gracious woman. She was a large woman, not in girth, but in size. She was big boned. She was very, very tall. So all of her life she had dealt with being what she considered odd, and many times she thought she was ugly because she did not have what she thought was the ideal build. But yet, as a clown, she was just loved. The kids just loved her. She especially loved her with children. And your title, Becoming What You Want to See in the World, I think is a very good one, because when she was in her costume, she saw herself differently. She had this persona that she developed that was really her. She allowed herself to come out. And that's often what happens with the acting profession, isn't it? People will move into different roles, and the parts of themselves that maybe nobody in real life would even have a clue that they had a capability of expressing comes out.
And you're very right about that, Donna. The acting gave me a safe place to learn how to express myself better, because there's the illusion that you're hiding behind the character, but actually you're not. But it feels safer. And your friend with the clown persona probably experienced a similar thing that I did. And but what it finally, what I finally learned was, wait a minute, this is all me. The characters that I'm playing are not me, but all of them are made up of parts of me, and I'm just kidding myself to think that this isn't me out there. And then when I realized that, and I realized I had for years been doing that in front of thousands and thousands of people, then the fear started to go away. Because I realized it was okay.
It's sort of like the adage, fake it until you make it, or you wake up to the fact that you've got more going on than you realize.
Yeah.
Now, let's go in to some of the comments, and one of them is in the very first chapter. And this book, again, is not a real thick book. It's the kind of book that you could, if you carried it in your briefcase or you had it beside your bed at night, just to read something before you go to sleep. It's just like take a little bite at a time. And this one is Happiness is Right Now, and Benjamin Franklin used one of his quotes, joy is not in things, it is in us. That, I think, is something that is very difficult for many people to work with, and that is the now, having the joy in the now, wherever you are, whatever you're doing.
Yes, I absolutely. And the thing is, it's so distracting. Our culture, and I've lived in other cultures where it's not as distracting, but the stuff here can be very distracting. And the truth of it is that joy is trying to get our attention constantly out there, but we're focused so much on either acquisition of stuff or acquiring it, or focusing on what's not working. So many times out in the world, what we hear about more is what's not working and what's wrong than what is. And the truth of it is, there's so much more out there than that's working that isn't. And
that's
it's
true.
Just the discipline, and there's some really simple tools in the book. And by the way, I made it a very short format book because people are so busy. They don't have time to read several hundred pages. There are tools in there that are really simple, easy, and free, and to help bring one's perspective around again to more of a balanced perspective of being able to see the joy that's trying to catch our attention constantly in our lives.
I liked your description of how we need to hear, how we need to listen, because so much in life, and I really agree with this, no matter what program you're watching, it could be program about history, it can be about somebody's love life, it could be anything. We are often finding that we are in this cycle, like a little hamster's wheel, of constantly evaluating just what you said, what's not right. We are not up with the Joneses, as the old saying goes, or gee whiz, my hair isn't as curly as Sally Sue's. Or, oh, gee whiz, I'm not making $5 million a year, I'm a failure. All of this is really not not really the essence of what we need to be aware of. And I think being able to really sit down and ask ourselves and take the time to do it, what does mean a lot to us? What is really the most important? Hearing ourselves, our inner selves. That mm-hmm. is something that takes time. And you're right, we're all so busy. I mean, we just feel like everything's speeding up at a phenomenal rate, and we just go, you've got to be kidding. You mean I'm supposed to shut down for a couple of hours and just listen? How do I do that?
Well, one of the tools that's in the book is the Joy Journal, and it's only 5 minutes a day. Just 5 minutes a day, and it's the most powerful 5 minutes. I did this nonstop for, oh gosh, almost 20 years, and I still do this technique. And that is, I used to experience a lot of depression in my 20s and into my early 30s, and mm-hmm. I reversed that whole trend of through using just this simple technique, 5 minutes a day, the Joy Journal. And what it does, it for 5 minutes, you simply write everything that is good in your life, everything that's good in your day, that's working, that made you smile. No matter how small it is, you just write. And it can be just bulleted items or just fragments, but just write all those things down. And it's amazing how empowering that is for the positive. And I told a friend about this. How powerful it was that just 5 minutes can undo a whole day that I perceived as being having some negativity in it and just completely reversed it all where I could see it was a good day. He said, well, that's physics. And I said, what? He goes, yeah, that's physics. Like attracts like is a principle of quantum physics. Now, this was 20 years ago. When I had this conversation, I'm going, okay, you're going to have to explain it. Well, the essence was an example that he said. He said, say you just meet someone and they've become a friend and they drive a blue car. Let's say, let's make it a gas efficient car, a blue Prius. And you never really noticed them much until you met this person. Now you see them everywhere, mm-hmm. and you're looking to see if that person is in the car, but they're not. It's just that all these cars were there anyway, but you never really noticed them until you had a point of focus. There was a reason, or you gave yourself a reason to look. The same is true with joy. It's there constantly. All the positive experiences in our lives, we just ignore or don't notice because we're so focused on something else that we're giving our energy to.
Animals have a wonderful way of being exactly of that positioning. Someone once said to me about dogs that dogs forget a lot of stuff. Of course, I know better than this, but they live in the now. And they said if we learned to do that as human beings, we would be so much better off. Because whatever hardships or whatever they've gone through, they just move on. They just keep on going on. And I think, you know, if you observe a lot of creatures in life, and we're of the animal kingdom, they do that because that's important. And it is something that all of us, and I was just reviewing some material this morning, where a woman's mother had experienced horrific, horrific things. And yet, part of this woman's story was that in the last 5 years of her life, she gave up all the blame, she gave up all the anger, she gave up all the frustration, and she was described as being like a fragrance, a flowery fragrance in everyone's life, because she wasn't burdened anymore. And your journal about working with joy, I think, is so significant, because like I said, this morning I was reviewing this, it really is an awareness that we have the choice about how we want to think and where we put ourselves. And if we put ourselves in that position of joy, your friend that talked about the physics of it, it does make a shift. It makes a big shift. And I like your quote in here by Helen Keller. No pessimist ever discovered the secret of the stars or sailed to an uncharted land or opened a new doorway for the human spirit. Amen to that one. They're too busy talking about what doesn't work.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you've got
Go ahead. By focusing on the negative, and because it's in our faces and it's emphasized a lot in our media, it makes for a culture, though, that's kind of perceptually trained to go to looking at what is not working, what's wrong, being critical, being cynical. But one of the things that attests to how powerful this 5 minutes is that I've reversed a whole trend of depression in my life just by doing this activity every day. But it's so powerful, the positive, that only 5 minutes is more powerful and can undo a whole day of perceived negativity. That's how powerful it is.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that you bring out in doing the Joy Journal, because in your book you have little titles that could put in, like, what are your successes of the day, things, experiences, or opportunities you've asked for, prayed for, and received, fun stuff and laughter, little miracles, if you have big ones, write those in, patting yourself on the back, being grateful, what kind of love have you expressed, to health and happiness, positive observations, you know, all of these little things. These are all triggers, and that puts you into a different mindset. And we have to remember that our progress as individuals comes in steps. It's not something that's going to come all at once.
Oh, yes, and I'm so glad you mentioned that, because people sometimes expect so much so soon, and it does come in. Everything that I've done in my life that's been meaningful and lasting has been in baby steps. And even doing something as simple as the Joy Journal, if you don't do it one day because you're so busy, some people have a tendency to beat themselves up and go, oh, I failed, I can't, I'm not doing this, you know, and just put it down. Instead, to just say, okay, I missed a day, big deal. I'm going to pick it right back up and start in again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it is. It's in increments, it's in steps, but it is cumulative. And before you know it, you've looked back. Say you had a New Year's resolution that you just took a tiny step every day. You look back at the end of the year and go, I did it. It's done. I accomplished it.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Tiny steps accumulate a great amount of measure after an amazingly short period of time. Your point is very well taken. You've got to tell us about the personal carrot inventory.
Well, you know, the old symbol of the carrot, or the metaphor of dangling the carrot in front of the donkey to get him to move. We all have carrots in our lives. What they are is motivators, things that are important to us, things are it's worth it to us to do something to get it. So to find those carrots in our lives, those things that motivate us, to want to take the steps to accomplish it, that's really important, particularly at this time of year, in the beginning of the new year.
Mm-hmm.
A carrot for me is radiant health. That's a huge carrot. So there are some things, some steps I have to take that I'm not too crazy about, but gets me there to that carrot, and that is regularly working out.
Mm-hmm.
Doing physical exercise regularly. And some days I just don't want to get out in the cold to go to the gym and work out, but I know what the carrot is, and it's so worth it. But knowing what those carrots are in our lives, it's really important.
I think that's a very good way of presenting it. Now, let's go into the fear of the unknown. I think that is something that grips people by their mental throats and just chokes them at times, because we have so often been indoctrinated. We're supposed to have everything secure. And I have known some people in my life, wonderful, wonderful people, that virtually created prisons in personal environments that disabled them from enjoying and exploring new venues. And they would say, oh, I envy all these other people. And you'd say, why? Why don't, you know, you're so talented. Why don't you do this? And, oh, no, I've got to make sure I have my sack of potatoes in my basement every month. And it's amazing what people do to themselves. Mm-hmm. Let's address that issue.
Well, the fear of the unknown is probably the most common fear there is out there. And, you know, fear is there for a reason. Nothing exists in this world without it having some reason to be there. Fear does keep us safe when we're children and we're taught not to cross the highway by ourselves because we could get killed. So there is a natural reason for it to be there. However, when we become adults and we're afraid of things that really don't represent a real security threat, but it feels that way. And the fear of the unknown is a real typical one because there are so many questions unanswered. What if? And so you're absolutely right. There's a paralysis that can happen to many people that just they cannot step into that world of the unknown, whatever it happens to be, because there are so many variables that they don't know are going to happen. What if I get up in front of this group of people and do this speech and I just blank out and I make a fool of myself and I'm a complete failure? Well, that can happen in anything in life, even the things that we're familiar with. So it's something that we kind of talk ourselves into. The risk is feels so much greater than there really sometimes is no risk involved at all.
Getting to a goal. Here we are in the beginning of a new year. Lots of people will have their goals, and they'll say, oh, gee whiz, I wonder if it's really worth doing. Last year I didn't make this goal, blah, blah, blah. But you bring out a point in that section in your book about how we self-sabotage. And I think that is one of the most difficult shadows about ourselves to conquer.
Correct me if
you feel differently. But I really think, and I look at myself and different things I've done in my life and I go, what in the world was I thinking? I could have done X, Y, Z. You know, it's really stupid. Why, you know, what did I do? But there is sometimes that little inner mental, what do you want to say, old tape? And all of a sudden it's like it's got an activate button. It goes chugga, 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 clink, 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 and it's got your attention. And you go, ooh, I can't do it. How did you deal with that? How do you deal with it?
Well, we all have our sabotages. Mine is perfectionism. That could be, that in the past, that's what I've had to overcome, is if I felt like I couldn't do it perfectly, then I just wouldn't do it at all. Like when I first started writing, I also have a degree in English. It's like, well, if I can't write like Shakespeare, I'm just not going to. That was one of my sabotages. There are many out there. Procrastination is one.
That's a big one.
That is a huge one and a very common one. Usually behind it is fear of failure. And of course we want to have control over everything. We want to have control over the outcome of everything and know in advance what the outcome is going to be, and that's not how the world works. And we can't control anyone else's free will. If we're in a job interview, we do the best we can, but ultimately it's up to the person sitting on the other side of the desk, their free will, whether or not they hire us or not. So there are so many things that are always going to be that way, an unknown. That's just the way life unfolds. But procrastination a lot of times is also that game of what if. Well, maybe I won't do that because I just don't know how it's going to turn out, so I'll just put that off. But all of the different sabotages have to do with a fear of some kind.
Oh, I think so. I really think so. Also, I think they are, we can have habits, which is, you know, similar in patterning. And those habits, because we're afraid of letting go of them, of switching them, we think we're going to lose something, we'll stick with something that maybe is doing exactly what we've just discussed, sabotaging. And we just go, well, okay, but at least I know this. I know this.
Yeah.
And I'll stay with it.
Yeah. The sad thing is, though, sometimes people stay in a pattern of the familiar, even though it's painful. But because it's familiar, they'll prefer that over something that they don't know.
Right.
And that's the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And, gosh, I think that's how a lot of people stay in situations that are unhappy for them, because it's familiar.
I really liked your story. You said this was a very humbling experience for you. You were reflecting on how you would beat yourself up with self-criticism, and all of a sudden this image came into your mind of a baby trying to learn to walk, and every time it stumbled or fell, you kicked it. And you said that was a horrifying picture to you, justifiably so. It would be like kicking a puppy. I mean, you know, this is just terrible. But you were doing that to yourself. I think your example that you have in the book is a very good one, a very clear one.
Oh, thank you. It was, I think it was the way that the wiser parts of me finally got the message across to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, you know, we're all learning to walk. That's how we learn to, we learn to take our first steps. We fell down to learn what balance was. But it's like that with everything. You know, it's, we take the step, we may stumble a little bit, and that's how we learn how, what balance is. And I was cruelly, actually, beating up on myself for making mistakes that needed to be a part of my process.
You have so many good sections in your book, and I know we're coming close to ending our chat here today. You had a question in your book. Where do you draw the line between persistence and stubbornly trying to open a door that was not meant for you to open? And I read that question and I thought, whoa, that is a good question. How many times do we feel we're supposed to go after something and, by God, this is the way it's going to be and I'm going to do it, and then it's not working? We don't know when to back up and take a different route.
Right. And I learned that lesson in acting. I learned that lesson in the audition process. And I worked a lot as an equity, professional equity actor. But I was persistent, and I learned how to do that. First of all, I was the type of person who would, if I get, you know, don't get a response, I just back off and don't follow through. I used to. Then I realized in acting, well, you'll never work if you do that. So persistence was something, is something that all successful actors have to learn. And that is, no, you keep coming back and you do follow through with another phone call. Once a director actually thanked me for being persistent. I called this director maybe 10 times over the course of 2 months. And finally, he returned my call, because I never got a return on a call. And he thanked me. He says, you know how many people give up? And he says, I'm just so busy, I get overwhelmed. And he said, thank you so much for calling me and leaving messages every few days so that I will remember to call you back. Well, there is a fine line between that, though, and trying to make a door open that's not there, or a door that's just not, you know, for me. There are so many times I feel like I've been saved from a lot of pain by a door not opening, but at the time I really wanted it to.
Well,
and I look back and I think, gosh, thank God it didn't open.
I agree with that. Mary Claire O'Neill is my guest today. Her wonderful book, Becoming What You Want to See in the World, is something that, as a part of your library, if you have someone that is going through some really difficult times, it would make a wonderful gift, because it's not a real thick book. It is a book that's just of the right size to be able to carry around in a purse or in a briefcase. And more than anything else, she's put things so succinctly that it enables you to take little bites at a time and digest for yourself those things that maybe you really want to change. It's a new year. Why not look at some new opportunities for yourself? Mary Claire O'Neill, your website is Mary Claire O'Neill. That's MaryClareOneal.com. I want to thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you so much, Donna. It really was my pleasure.
Well, you've got a wonderful, and anybody that acts with Anthony Hopkins, he's one of my favorite actors, even though he could have, I didn't like him in Silence of the Lambs because I didn't like Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
but
he's
anyway.
a very kind, wonderful, phenomenal actor.
Absolutely
yeah.
phenomenal actor, very talented man. So it's just a delight having you as a guest today, and I wish you continued success, and tell your husband never to give up being a clown.
Oh, I won't. He's very good at it.
This is Donna Sebo again, my guest, Mary Claire O'Neill, Becoming What You Want to See in the World. We're taking a break. Go to her website, MaryClaireO'Neill.com. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717, TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And I'll be delighted to light up this new year with a little bit of insight. And all I'll need from you is your first name or your initial. After that, you're welcome to ask me, after I give you what I perceive, anything, a question about anything that you like. Now, I do have a very brief horoscope for 2010. We're going to be talking today about Scorpio and Sagittarius. That'll be in a little bit of time. But before I did that, I wanted to let you know, tomorrow we're going to have Frederick Hahn on as a guest. This is about physical fitness for kids. Now, we all know as adults how important it is to have some kind of physical fitness that we really like doing, whether it's dancing, running, participating in swimming, anything that is for you going to enable you to physically get up, move, and stay well. Well, we have such an epidemic, as it is being promoted, of obese kids. Well, the lifestyle today has really changed a great deal. Kids don't walk to school. Kids usually are riding all the time. They're sitting at computers. They're very inactive. They're not doing what kids normally would be doing out and about. So we have this challenge, and Frederick really has some very good concepts and ideas. So we'll be talking about that tomorrow. And then Randy Rogers is going to be with me on Thursday. We're going to be talking about the key of life. This is Randy's story about how he discovered how to make his life far more fulfilling. And then from the heart of love, we're going to be having beautiful harp music on Friday. A lady that I've known for a number of years, Sammy Johnson, who has been involved in hospice work. And when I had a particular program 8 years ago, she came into studio where I was working and brought this really, really wonderful harp. It was amazing how it was designed. And she brought that into studio and played it right there live, and it was wonderful. So Sammy and I have been friends over these years, and she's just come out with a new CD, and we are going to be playing that music on Friday. So we've got a wonderful lineup of people. I hope you'll share the information with others. And remember always, if you're not able to hear the show, we have the archives here on BBS, and you can go right into those archives and listen to them later on at your convenience. I realize that everyone is exceedingly busy. Now, I wanted to give a couple of tidbits of information. Don't forget, you can call me during the latter part of the show, 888-815-9756. I wanted to bring up something regarding credit card fraud. I'm sure that you've heard that now there's a level of technology that, dependent on the type of card that you have, the people, if they have the right electronic apparatus, can actually pick up the name of your card and all of your information just by walking by you. Well, there's not only that, but you really have to pay attention to some new aspects with credit cards. And I wanted to bring this out because almost everybody I know uses them. You need to pay close attention to the charges on your credit card statement when it arrives each month. Do not ignore it. Look at it. It's very, very important. Because those out there that are wanting to do things in their own way and make you pay for it will test a validity of a stolen number by making small charges, some as low as 25 cents. I've never heard of this. Who's going to use a credit card for 25 cents? Well, if you overlook the tiny amounts that don't add much to your bottom line, it enables the scammers to make even bigger purchases. By looking for and reporting any odd charges, you can foil the fraudsters and protect your finances. Also, keep in mind, you don't want to use your checking account debit card if you want to be sure that you have some kind of protection. I was talking with someone involved with security at banks, about a week ago, and they were saying that it is so important that a couple of things people be aware of. If you're going to have a particular card that you want to use and you don't want to, if you want to have something other than a debit card, maybe get a prepaid card. Watch out and shop around for the right one you want, and then put on it what it is, the amount that you want to spend. And if you wanted to do that every month, then it's not going to be a problem. One, you're not going to overuse your credit level, but two, you can always add to that card, especially if you're doing a lot of traveling, exactly what you think you're going to need. But also be aware that if you have a checking account, and this was passed along to me also, don't keep all of your cash in your checking account. There are people who have had their checking accounts cleared out because someone via the internet or getting a hold of the debit card or whatever reasons, they're very sophisticated today, they have access to that checking account and they wipe it out and you don't have recourse unless your bank has a certain protection policy for you. So they say keep your money in a separate savings account and transfer it into your checking account when you want to have that cash available for whatever is going to be processed. It just seems like in today's world we really have to be alert and aware to all of these variables. It's so easy for those that are determined to hack into things or to steal to do it, but there are ways that you can be savvy, you can be smart, so that your money is not going to be flying away on wings of no return into your pocket. So you want to be very alert there. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. Psychic detectives. These are people that I have a great deal of regard for. I opted not to become involved with police work, even though there have been some instances where I have done some of that. But I have a great deal of appreciation for people that choose to be involved in that area of specialty because it takes a certain type of person to be able to deal with what you would see. You have to have a detachment. You have to be able to look at even the most horrific situations, like you were looking at a Disney cartoon, not make any judgments, and give information as you get it. Well, this is not something that is new to our time frame. A psychic detective in the 1940s, Arthur Price Roberts, was exceptionally good at doing this very kind of sleuthing all of his life. And he fulfilled, on January the 2nd, 1940, a prediction he had made 2 months earlier before he passed away, after a lifetime of foretelling disasters and catching crooks. Well, since childhood, Roberts had had the skill to see and find what others could not. He stayed illiterate all of his life. He was afraid that education would destroy this incredible talent that he had. Now, these are some of his achievements. He saved a wrongly convicted murderer from being executed. How he did that is he intuited where the body of a missing man had been snagged by sunken logs in a river. And he located the killer in a 2-year-old murder case by picking the killer's picture out of a series of police mugshots and announcing where the killer was working in another country. He also tracked down a stolen taxi while the thieves were still driving it 25 hours after the theft. And in Milwaukee in 1935, he went to the police saying, "There's going to be a lot of bombings, dynamitings. I see 2 banks blown up and perhaps a city hall. They're going to blow up police stations as well. Then there's going to be a big blow up south of a particular river, and then it's going to be all over." Well, 8 days after he made this announcement at the police station, the village hall was blown up, 2 people died, and others were injured. The next day, these same people blew up 2 Milwaukee banks and 2 police stations. Now, the police, because they had a lot of faith in him and what he said, had put on extra police patrols, and then a 6th explosion took place, and it was heard up to 8 miles away, and the garage where it had been activated was totally obliterated. Now, there were 2 young men, Hugh and Paul, who were responsible for the other 5 bombings. They were inside the garage with 50 pounds of dynamite for their 6th bomb when the explosives accidentally detonated. Roberts had correctly predicted the entire series of explosions, including the final accidental blast. Now, when you hear these stories, you will say, "Oh, my goodness, how is that possible?" Well, there's really no such thing as time or space. And when you have the ability to be able to perceive information, it's like turning on the internet. All of the thoughts, the actions, projections, past patternings, everything is there. It's a big cosmic soup, if you will. Someone like Roberts is able to access that. And he chose not to learn how to read or write because he felt it was going to interfere with what he was capable of doing, which I don't believe is the case, but it can. But it doesn't have to. But he didn't have anybody else to tell him differently. But he goes in, and he's all of a sudden, it's boom. He's in, he's activated his cursor, if you will, and it's taken him to a particular patterning, and he sees it. It's clearly all there in the mind's black and white, if you will. And then he has to be able to relate it. Every single one of us do this on one level or another. It's what we call intuition. The reason that this is so significant is that he was able to articulate it so clearly. Now, he wasn't wrong regarding the educated mind. Often, what happens and what causes conflict with intuition and the thinking process is that everyone's mind has its own language. I've said this for years, and it's the best way I know how to explain it. You tell one person, what do you see when I give you the word apple? And they'll describe an apple. They might even draw it. You have someone else, you say, what do you see as an apple? They'll draw another picture. They see it differently. You have someone else, and they'll draw another apple. They may not even like apples. So you have different perspectives with each one of us. We try to make things generic, but the individual is always so unique in the way that the mind works. So I'm going to discuss this a little bit further after we come back. We're going to be taking a break. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Also, I'll be giving out the horoscopes for Scorpio and Sagittarius. These are very brief things. They're so fun. They're so simple for 2010. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay only $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 1-800-872-8852. That's 1-800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Gedrose. Buy it today. 1-800-872-8852.
Telephone number to call into is 888-815-9756. I wanted to continue the theme that I was discussing because I think it's important for us to realize that we are so fortunate in today's world to be able to talk about the capability of mind and the ability for us to be receivers and senders mentally, and that psychic ability is utilizing all of those factors, believe it or not. So let's go back to the psychic detective. You have this person who is able to pick up information on certain situations. It takes as I mentioned earlier, a type of mental focus and a detachment. Many times when people begin to become aware of their capability in this arena, it happens rather spontaneously. And I think of a woman, I didn't have the privilege of getting to know her, but her name, I believe, is Kitty. And this woman worked with the Los Angeles Police Department. She was just incredible. But it started off when she was in college, and she was taking particular courses regarding cults and groups like this. And there was something that clicked in her psyche. And she was picking up through dreams information on murders that were linked with these particular groups. And the first time she went into a police station, and she was nothing weird or oddball. She was just like the rest of us. She looked like an ordinary person, whatever ordinary is. And she goes in and she said, I understand that there has been this murder, because she had this very, very vivid dream the night before. She goes in and she describes the information about the location, describes what was left on the ground by the killers, describes the young woman and that she had a particular type of clothing item that was found. Well, when it had hit the newspapers, the story, the clothing item and something else had not been mentioned. So, obviously, they hear this from her. She's sitting there. She's talking. The first thing they think of is, my God, this woman has to be in on it. Nobody knew about this. Well, she wasn't. And she kept having these dreams. They would not go away. And it got to be so much of a pressure upon her psychologically that she had to go back into the police station. She said, I want you to know I'm having these dreams. This is what I'm seeing. Well, the other information she was getting was so specific, they put her in jail. They arrested her. They definitely thought she was a guilty party. She said, I haven't been there. I don't know what this is. I'm telling you information. Finally, they were able to realize that this woman was having an exceptional experience, and consequently, the case was solved because of it. Well, the experience on one hand had been rather unsettling for her, but on the other hand, she was extremely intelligent, and she said, I have a talent for this. I don't know why, but I do. And so she then dedicated herself to volunteering time with the police departments, different individuals that came to know her and said, all right, I want to work with you. And eventually, she became so that she could do it at will, and she would be given a file, and they wouldn't say anything to her, and she was just extremely good. In fact, she was teaching at a university for a while before she left the area that she was in. But this is a woman whose life was just absolutely amazing. It is not something to be envied, however, because there was that part of her that until the case was resolved, it was as if the pictures would stay in her mind until everything was put into order. So it takes a very special kind of person that is willing to deal with that. And if you yourself are experiencing any kind of intuitive experiences, you need to write them out, but also don't be afraid of them. Be aware that this is part of the survival mechanism that as human beings we have been given for the purpose of perhaps being able to make choices to make things different. There is so much that we do not know about in life. We like to think that we've reached our apex. It reminds me of something I was reviewing this morning where scientists said in the 1800s, we don't need to have any more university training. We don't need any of this because we already know it all. Ho, 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 look at what we're discovering today. It's you cannot ever become complacent or arrogant thinking that you've got it all, because you don't. You're always going to be learning something new. But be willing to explore your own mind. Be willing to explore your own individuality. When you're willing to do this, you're going to find that there will be so many fascinating experiences, synchronicities. You're going to find sometimes you'll have a flash in the head where it says, gee, turn left down 4th Avenue here, and you turn left down 4th Avenue and you park, and for some reason you're right there in front of you in a store, in a window, is exactly what you've been looking for 2 months. It's amazing the way life flows. And remember my guest, Mary Claire, today, she said that a friend had told her so many years ago that like attracts like. Well, what you focus on mentally will often bring you into that space where there is a, what you'd call a conclusion, a finalization, but however you want to describe it, there is that continuity. It's as if the universe says, I want you to be in the flow of what you're focusing on. Let's bring the harmonic together. It's fascinating. I've been in the work for over 40 years. I'll tell you, I love it just as much today as I did when I first began. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't ever let anybody tell you that you cannot make your destiny, that you cannot create something in your life that is unique and special for you. You wouldn't have the desire there if it wasn't capable or if you were not capable of achieving it. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we'll be talking kids and wellness. Look forward to having you join me. Have a fabulous, fabulous day. We'll talk with you same time, same place. This is Donna. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.